These are all the recollections, Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated, sunder. Five. I imagine it is only appropriate that I pick up where I left off. That's the way these recollection things go. And that is the only way that I know to tell you about the turbulent and dreadful times when the various states broke apart, to pick up where I left off. So we will go back to those early autumn days of 2031. Not much time had passed from when I had turned in my resignation on the business of working on the dikes. These dikes were supposed to hold the oceans at bay. I do like that pun, awful though it may be. I don't remember much humor back then, none at all. No one was laughing. The jokes that were told were dark, and often aimed at the Jersey boys that come down from the flooded plains of the mid-Atlantic states, except their indentures, and work like dogs on those sad and so often slumping, vanquished-looking structures. There was so much work to be done back then, so much. Moving families and businesses and towns by whole cloth from one tidal area of lowland Virginia up to the higher ground. It meant displacement after displacement after displacement. It was for so many. I myself was wholly and dismally distracted. I could not work, just didn't feel like it. At 17 years of age, I was not much of a laborer whatsoever, but I felt I had reason to be distracted. That's where we pick up. I procured my father's Ford F-250 pickup truck. It's a monster thing. Going up to the Shenandoah property, looking for Lays Fitzgerald. Lovely Lays. She had left me a cryptic note. Most everything Lays said was cryptic, one way or the other. One of the things that I always loved about him. So went up there looking. She said she would be there. But when I arrived at the property, I found everything but dear Lays. Everything, memories. Found tax dodge and name changers. And the ruthless Rayford Covington. Rayford Covington, who's a general blight on the human condition, sold tax-indentured souls in the state of Texas. He had hit me in the back of the head, throwing me down. He threw me down hard. He pressed his knee in my back. He was under the impression that I knew where Lays Fitzgerald was. I did not. For the life of me, I wish I did. I wish I did know. You can't protect her. Rayford rasped close in my ear. I don't know why he had the rasp, but it is something that arch-villains want to do. They rasp. I laugh now, but I was scared shitless then. I can find her without you, Rayford said. But I'll hurt her unless you tell me where she is. You tell him right now. Now, who knows, when I think about it, who knows why I felt like arguing with him. So add on to being fairly lazy. Apparently wasn't too bright. I told him I did not know. I told him that a number of times. Now that's about the time the double-barreled shotgun cocked behind us. Rayford did not seem to notice. I do not know how you cannot notice the primordial sound of a cocking shotgun. There's nothing more emblematic of threat and dark portent. In our society, it's in our blood, it's in our American DNA. To hear a shotgun cocking is to be stopped, to be in fear. It's what the sound is for. It's the sound of a rattlesnake. It's the sound of God. It permeates our folklore. It hits us in the pit of the stomach, the back of the brain. That sound crosses right over the Blue Ridge, right to Hollywood. Man with a gun, he poked Rayford in the back with it. "Get that stick out of my back and leave out of here." And he casually swung his arm back to swat the gun out of the way like it was nothing. "Get out," he said. And then he got poked in the back right between the shoulder blades. He raised slightly off me. I gasped for breath, found some air, and a moment later, Rayford was gasping for breath laying right next to me, his dark, soulless eyes staring unfocused for a few seconds. He'd been more than poked with that shotgun. He'd been slapped upside the head with the butt of that gun. He tried to roll up to a crouch, but he didn't have the breath within him. He slumped back down. "Rayford, don't a man with a gun mean nothing to anybody anymore?" With Sam bellows. All Forrester, he was shaking his head. He pointed the gun at Rayford. He knew Rayford. He knew him all too damn well. He did not like him.
"You wouldn't use that thing."
"Oh, you know I would, Rayford. I'd blow your sorry ass all the way to Texas if I thought it would do the world any good. Now get out of that cape and those boots and the hoodie. You look ridiculous, you do, Rayford. Name changers, they don't like it when they have a false man amongst them."
Now, a number of the name changers, all named Taylor Smith in this case, had gathered round. They were dressed the same, they act the same, the same purpose, same name. A few hundred of them arrived up in the mountains that day. The younger ones, a pretty girl, and a boy about my age, they parted, got out of the way of an older Taylor Smith who appeared.
"Sam?"
That man nodded, like he knew Sam Bellows. From a different era, probably did. Sam collected odd and worthy connections and folks.
"Anything we can do?"
"No, Clint. I mean, Pastor Smith." Sam half smiled at his verbal stumble. He was not a man for large or religious groups, nor was he a man for indentured taxation. He had allowed the name changers to come on that property. Understood that now.
"Well, Pastor Smith, we've just got a bad apple posing as one of your flock."
"We've been watching him,"
Pastor said. Sam considered, took a pause, pulled out his pipe. He had a foot on the back of Rayford's neck. He pulled out his pipe, tapped it, filled his pockets looking for tobacco and a match. Almost lit the pipe up, but didn't quite. He did that a lot. Like he forgot what he was doing, but he had not forgotten. He used to drive a young man crazy, waiting for him to go through his routine. Took me many, many years to realize Sam was playing a game. He played it his own good speed. He was buying time. He wanted everybody to be thinking, but he did not want them to know what he was thinking. You could see that Rayford, pretty upset about whatever he thought Sam had thought of. "So, Pastor Smith," Sam finally said, "about whereabouts did this sorry specimen here latch onto your group?"
"Somewheres along the upper Potomac as we fall down a hopper ferry," Pastor said.
"That's a ways.
Somehow we knew he'd come in here. Hard not for a body to tap into somebody else's chip.
They mind too," Sam said.
"Find out what they want to find out."
"That's true, Sam, but we in the modern world, here in the modern world, sometimes being able to speak directly into my flock's head is a blessing. So I see the internal biomemory chip as a double-edged sword of God, I do. I have no doubt if there had been a memory chip 2,000 years ago, Jesus and the Jews would have partook."
"No doubt," Sam smiled.
Then he turned his attention back to what was under his foot. "Rayford, I'm going to let you get off this land. I don't want you here. Never have. This is Ashby property."
Rayford spit. "Not for long." He smiled like he knew something. Sam ignored him.
"Before you go, Rayford, I'll have to tag you."
Sam pulled out a chip idiot. Now I do remember the chip idiot. Looked like a cross between a .22 caliber pistol and a syringe. They were used to implant tracking devices under the skin, mostly keep up with game, cattle. Well, in some states, convicts. Rayford, he was the latter, I have no doubt.
Now, Rayford, you're not going to be able to get this out any more than you can get your social chip out. Oh, Jesus, all hell. Sam stared. You did it, didn't you? You yanked out your chip out of your head. Rayford tried to turn his head away, but I could see, we all could see the dripping discharge from Rayford's eye. Left eye. He'd had that chip over his head. He probably had that chip since he was a baby. 7, 8 years old. That chip probably taught him how to watch TV, a little bit of reading, how to play a video game. Looked like he had pulled the chip himself. No legitimate doctor, whatever pulled the chip, now back then, was physically dangerous and against the law. Certainly old federal law, and almost against most state laws, except for West Virginia, Montana, Idaho. Those places didn't care what you pulled out of your head. So Sam, Pop Rayford with that chip, idiot. Rayford winced, stood up and ran. Ran like a deer with a chip in his butt. Sam checked the little digipad to make sure the tracker was tracking. It beeped. Beeping being the universal sign of a happy machine. Sam, you let him go. Sam, why'd you do that? Why didn't you shoot him? He's after Lays. He was going to take Lays, I said. Sam shrugged and smiled a wan smile. I always liked that word, wan. Well, Turner, if I had shot him, I'd have killed him, then I had to bury him. Can't think of any hole, no matter how deep, that deserves Rayford Covington in it. Just can't. So let him run. I was not so sure about that, never was. Still not. Where's Lays? I asked Sam. I have no idea, he said. Well, there you have it. Damn it all to hell. There should have been a scene where Lays came running out of the crowd of name changers, slipped out of her Taylor Smith costume calling my name. It had been a millisecond recognition. The crowd would have parted, because that's what crowds do, they part. She would have run up and she would have wrapped her arms around my neck, and kissed me, hugged me, told me she had thought of me every waking hour. There, in a nutshell, there's a problem with these recollection things. No dramatic arc whatsoever. No heroic gun battle, just a bad guy with a tracking chip in his butt running through the woods. No girl at all. Just a foolish 17-year-old boy with his mouth hanging all kinds of wide open. No denouement. The story just stops. What exactly do you mean by no? I asked Sam. Sam motioned. Go down to the house and get cleaned up. I did not argue. I felt busted. I felt defeated. I was tired and trying to figure out my next move. If I should go on further, if I should go to Ohio, I knew that I most likely would have to walk. Very little gasoline winter was coming. Borders would be closed. I'd have to be careful, but I knew I'd have to look for Lays. I had to go on. I knew it. I walked up to several hundred yards just below the ridge to Sam's cabin. Pushed open that squeaky back screen door. It was a cloudy day, or maybe a fog had yet to burn off from that morning. A little dust on the wooden kitchen floor. Hard to see inside, but there was a silhouetted figure seated at the table. Materna, how nice of you to come rescue me, Lays said. I did not see that coming. Never did. That's all for this chapter. More recollections to come. Turner Ashby.